You are listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 104, Hotel Transylvania. Everyone killed the wife.
Welcome, welcome to the 104th episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. My name is Mason, and today our episode is on Hotel Transylvania. There's going to be a lot of blah, blah, blahs in this episode.
I don't do that.
All right. Welcome, everybody. We are the Rotoscopers. I'm here with my lovely co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson.
Hello.
And this is going to be part of a two-part like series of episodes because our next episode after this is Hotel Transylvania 2.
So, which I have seen and I love it.
Yeah, so love it.
Those who are wondering what the heck happened to Lilo and Stitch, I am very, very, very sorry. We decided to bump Lilo and Stitch after Hotel Transylvania 2. And really the main reason was we can't review Hotel Transylvania 2 without doing the predecessor, which sets so much up. So that was kind of the executive decision we made. So this episode, we are doing Hotel Transylvania. Next episode, Hotel Transylvania 2. And then the long-awaited, coveted Lilo and Stitch. We already have like 6 voicemails ready for that episode. So people are excited. So we're just going to have to make you wait even more. Mwahaha.
Beautiful maybe. With daddy you will stay, and if a human tries to harm you, I'll simply say because you're daddy's girl.
Ever since she was born, I've wanted to protect my little ghoul, so I created a place where all monsters could be safe
from them.
Humans hate us. They're vicious, and they're very loud.
Dad, everyone here is ancient.
N27.
I want to go out and see the world.
Whoa, 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 honey, you're too young.
I'm 118 years old.
Don't give me the pouty bad face. This is Hotel Transylvania. All of our monster friends are right here. The mummy, Wayne the wolf.
Yeah, it's a mess back there.
And your Uncle Frank's dropping in, too.
Housekeeping!
Hello?
A human! How did you find this place?
Oh, I was just mountain climbing with some dudes and heard this story about an awesome castle. Speaking of awesome, that cape thing is killing it! Look at these cool costumes. Check it out, I'm a Franken homie. Whoa, what's your name?
My name's Mavis.
Rex's daughter's in love with...
Half human!
Go to a corner, you're in the timeout.
I'm a grown man.
Seriously, Dad.
You are coming with us.
I'm staying.
Oh! Why did that hurt me?
Out of the way, Grandpa!
Stay away from my daughter!
I think your dad's really starting to like me. Hi.
Hotel Transylvania.
Now go and never return.
Wait, never return to the hotel?
What? Well, I just used my powers to erase your memory. I looked straight into your eyes.
Oh, maybe it's the contact lenses.
The what?
Here, let me just try and get them out real quick.
Oh, that is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
Almost got it.
Yep. So what were your guys' first recollections of this movie?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's you know.
Trying to get him out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I saw it really recently. I didn't see it in theaters, unfortunately.
Okay.
I remember all the hype. 2012, that was when our, you know, the podcast was just a little fledgling podcast, only about 6 months old at the time that this had come out. And I remember covering the news stories for this and being really excited for it to be released. And unfortunately, didn't get to check it out initially when it came out, but not very quickly after. And the way that I did is I had a bunch of movies that I wanted to trade in at, you know, just a place where you traded movies and CDs and whatnot. So I traded them all in, and I thought I was going to get so much money, and I didn't. That's always the way. They're like, I'll give you like, it's unopened. 50 cents? Anyways.
This isn't Skyrim, Morgan. You don't get anything for your goods anymore.
I know, but... So I had some movies that I could get with it, and I saw Hotel Transylvania, the Blu-ray, and I had never seen it, but I made a gamble, and I bought it. I think it was a very good, because it's a movie that I would go back and watch again and again. I love the characters. I actually think Adam Sandler is quite good in this film. He really does like carry the film, which is great. So I remember being honestly shocked. I mean, this is kind of jumping ahead. When it did okay in theaters, but then very quickly they announced that they were going to do a sequel. And I remember thinking, having not seen it, of course, really? I heard it was good, but really? So we'll talk a little more about that, because now I understand. So my really is, yeah, really.
Well, I think around the time, I mean, Wreck-It Ralph had just come out right before this, or was it right after?
Before, a few months before.
Yeah, it was just a couple months beforehand. And so I just remember we were really preoccupied with that, I think. Yeah, so I didn't get to see this in, what?
Test screening was before, so that's my...
Oh, that's right.
Oh, test screening.
Wreck-It Ralph came out a month or two after.
That's why, okay. All right. I just remember being like, not really being the only movie that I was really looking forward to that year, so I'm bummed that I didn't get to see it, or I didn't go out and see it then in theaters, but... I did see it. Of course, my sister Marissa had it, and so of course I ended up watching it. And I just remember enjoying it, every little bit of it, and just being like, "Man, this is very different." But for a CG animated film, but I like it. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Me and Shanna both enjoyed it, and I like to have this little gauge, this little litmus test or whatever. If Shanna really, really, really likes an animated film, like it really impacted her, then it's really something, because she's not easily fazed by things. So, but yeah, we both really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cute, and I thought, I don't know. I'm super in love with Genndy Tartakovsky, like Siri Tartakovsky. I always get his name wrong, but I love him. And one of those relationships where I love you, but I can't remember your name. Adam Sandler, 50 First Dates. But I really enjoyed it. This was actually a release in the 28th of September 2012, which is World Rabies Day. Holy rabies! Holy rabies!
That's funny.
Yeah, it is really funny, and I'm also really confused as to what exactly World Rabies Day is. Like, they brought this up on the Frederator channel that I got a lot of this trivia info from, and they were like, so what is World Rabies Day? Is it like you celebrate rabies, or you celebrate awareness of rabies? Like, do we all have to dress up and act like we have rabies on World Rabies Day? Anyway. Fact, 4 people per year. This office joke.
Oh, man. That's great. So Genndy Tartakovsky, he is fantastic. Well, let's just go into a little bit. Budget for this film was $85 million. A box office was $358.4 million. Yay!
Of course, we're getting all the information from Wikipedia. But with this film, this budget is actually pretty low compared to a lot of films and DreamWorks films for sure. Yet it to me, it doesn't look like it was necessarily made on the cheap. And I think one reason, which we'll talk about, is the animation, how caricatured it is and over the top, and it's not necessarily a sense of realism. So they were able to do that, and it dominated in the box office. It wasn't necessarily beloved by critics. However, people liked it, and they liked it well enough that it made its return, you know, multiple times over, which is fantastic. That's the goal in life.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we really dive into the movie, can we just talk about the amazing Genndy Tartakovsky for a second?
Let's do it.
Maybe for a couple minutes. Like I said, I'm really obsessed with him. Two of my favorite shows growing up, I will admit, were Dexter's Laboratory and Powerpuff Girls. I have fan art of Powerpuff Girls that I drew when I was like in sixth grade or seventh grade. Because the characters were really easy to draw. And so I really loved those shows. And then Samurai Jack, I was like blown away with. I got more into that as an adult. But hey, did you guys know that Dexter's Lab was created when I want to just call him GT because it's a really complicated name, when Genndy T was only 25 years old?
Oh my gosh, what have I done with my life?
I'm 27, what have I done with my life? I want to make a cartoon show. Anyway, one could argue that getting into the animation industry was easier back then because it wasn't as the content explosion of, you know, the past decade hadn't happened yet, and it didn't turn into an industry that was all competitive. So I don't know. You could argue for or against that point, but he was very much involved in animation around my age. And quick Samurai Jack fact. As of 2012, when Hotel Transylvania was made, Genndy Tartakovsky had been approached 4 times to make a Samurai Jack movie. And in some of his more recent interviews, he's been hinting that they're working on a Samurai Jack movie, which I really hope they do. I don't know if that's just a rumor, but here's the hoping, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of his style, it's like he really loves that super zany cartoon style of like, it reminds me a lot of like Chuck Jones, Tex Avery, you know, the good old boys from, Looney Tunes. And everything is so like pose and silhouette oriented. Like he knows how to really hold a dynamic shape and form like a strong character out of that. And also he takes really simplistic shapes, you know, kind of like that old style from the 50s of animation where he just had, you know, very rudimentary geometric shapes for characters. He brings a lot of that in. And I love his mastery of timing. You know, his characters can be like super cartoony and wacky and, you know, doing the doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, you know, a Fred Flintstone thing. And then at another second, he knows how to, on the other hand, he knows how to hold really long emotional pauses that was so prevalent in Samurai Jack. Like he really built mood in that show. And so I think when I think of him, I think of a mastery of timing. He really knows how to push cartoony like poses and things like that, but he also knows when to slow down and really hold something. And so I consider him an animation master. I don't know about you guys, but I really consider Genndy Tartakovsky an animation master. And, you know, timing is one of the hardest things to master, speaking of the 12 principles of animation. And so it blew my mind when he did that Popeye footage. Do you guys remember seeing that?
Oh,
did you
yeah.
all see that?
And then they just pulled the rug right under us and said, nah, that's not happening.
Oh, it was so sad. I was really sad about that one.
It really was. I know it was just meant to be like test footage or whatever, just to see what they could do. But man, did you see what they could do? I mean, like John Lasseter did his paper about transferring the 12 principles of animation from hand-drawn to 3D like in the late 80s. And we're just now like discovering just what we can push and just how exact we can get it to the old masters of 2D animation. So I consider him like a real driving force into like, you know, the rise of cartoony 3D animation. And the people who are diehard hand-drawn fans really need to look at Hotel Transylvania 2, and his other projects coming up, because he really takes a 2D perspective into his work. Mm-hmm. And he said in several interviews that he transferred that into Hotel Transylvania.
Yeah, I was watching the movie with the director's commentary on there, and he was just saying how, well, if I were drawing it, this was what I could do, so let's do this. And then everybody who's there technically, like the technical supervisors and everybody, are just looking at him like, okay, we'll do that. And like just trying to pretend like they're not scared out of their wits, because they're just like, this has never been done before. And they, I did see a couple bonus features where they showed what they called Gindy Vision, where they would they would show how they, you know, added the motion blur, but then also made it a little stronger and added less blur at some areas, just to make sure that you're able to get the right cues and the right amount of time looking at it, so it didn't look too blurry or too smooth. So I have mad respect for the man, and you know, I was in love at Popeye. I really wish that that one would have come to fruition. It's okay. Here's the hoping that it's still
so that he'll make something like that in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, when you think of animation legends, like I do think of him. I think of Brad Bird, I think of John Lasseter, you think of, you know, Walt Disney for what he did, Ron and John. You think of these big names, right? And he is definitely has earned his place in them, especially for his work with Cartoon Network and all the different TV series from Powerpuff Girls to Clone Wars to Samurai Jack. And then now he's made this transition into film. And this was his very first feature-length film that he directed. And he has signed on with Sony, and he has quite a few coming up. There's obviously Hotel Transylvania 2. There was going to be Popeye, and now that's who knows what's happening with that. And then there's also been a film announced, and the film is called Genndy Tartakovsky's Can You Imagine?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Can You Imagine?
Can You Imagine? It has his full name in it. We'll see if it stays that way, but that's definitely a huge tribute to him. And props to for Sony for realizing what great talent they have and being able to sign him for this deal. It kind of reminds me of for Real FX and Book of Life with Jorge Gutierrez. They have him and in their studio, and he's working on a few pictures for them. And you know, that when you find someone who's just so incredible and amazing and are just a visionary in a way in how they're able to interpret the medium of animation and storytelling, you got to keep them. You got to do everything you can, right? It's just like support. Yeah. Got to sign them for a 12-year contract and hope that they don't get injured.
Right.
Hope they don't choke on like a donut or like something that someone, the intern, brought in for lunch. Hope that the interns don't spill coffee on them and they die. I don't know. Hey, did you guys know that Tartakovsky was the sixth director for this film? Not that they changed directors six times, like they were dual directors, you know. But he came in very late in the game. He did not get to build this this, you know, film universe from the ground up. He did revamp several of the characters, as he explained. But thankfully, he said he was involved in animation, timing, and camera work, or layout in animation production terms. And so I think those are definitely his strong points. And so, although color, I don't know how much of like production design or like concept design he was really involved with in Samurai Jack, Clone Wars, or Dexter's Lab, or Powerpuff Girls, but his use of color is very inventive. Like it's very 90s. You know, everything kind of pops out, and he's got very vibrant colors. But yeah,
he mentioned he had come in midway, and he talked about the sets, and he said there were some sets that they were already halfway built by the time I got there, and we just had to work with it. Which is interesting. I mean, this film is great as it is, but just it would be even more interesting to see what happens when he has full reign. And that's what we will see in Hotel Transylvania 2, how they're able to push some things, which is very funny. I must give a little sneak peek. It's very funny, and it's in the same vein of humor as this, but we got to talk about this first.
let's talk animation. I know it's weird for y'all to talk about animation on the Animation Addicts podcast.
So weird.
Hotel Transylvania 2, how would you describe its animation?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
You mean one?
One, sorry. And two.
Just like you were saying, the Chuck Jones, the Looney Tune-esque for me.
Yeah, it's very cartoony. It's extremely exaggerated and caricatured. It's just, I just think, you know, Dracula does it best where he's talking and he moves into one.
Yeah, place. He's like,
and then very quickly slides into another pose where the back is overly arched and the head is held up high. And it's just everything is pushed and exaggerated and very stylized.
His neck is 3 feet long and goes around corners.
Hey.
That he makes, the eyes and the expressions are just,
and also how his whole face can just transform into this very demonic looking evil bad guy vampire, when he has to lay down some tough love. And it's interesting because we've been talking about Dracula as the focal point of the animation, but he really is the star of the show as far as like technical animation goes. You know, like we discussed, everything is very like stretchy and pose, focused and stuff. Very broad and silly. I guess talking specifically about Dracula, I saw a behind the scenes video on YouTube. I'll try to include the link so that we can put it in the show notes. But it showed a scene breakdown. It was probably the same video that Chelsea was describing with manipulating the motion blur artistically. But they go frame by frame in this one shot where he's sneaking behind a lot of people and he's like ducking behind them and jumping, and his whole body just turns into this like squiggle that just like ebbs and flows like a wave to one pose, and then he's like this, and then he goes, and then he's like this, mm-hmm. And so I do rigging and technical direction for characters in my grad program in animation, and I can't even begin to figure out like how they got him to squash and stretch like that, but still maintain these beautiful like movement arcs. And then boom, he's snapping into a pose, and then just to have all these kind of, I guess they were like cluster nodes or like a linear path or something or a spline that just like defines his whole body and stuff. And I don't know. I love that stuff. And of course they like Chelsea said, like his rig was very complex, and then they also relied on a lot of like tactical motion blur to get him just right. Motion blur is like a miracle worker. It helps me in all my projects.
TV, and it auto blurs everything. I had a friend actually talking about motion blur, but in the bad sense. I had a friend text me and she said, "Do you remember the old Beauty and the Beast film?" And I was like, "What is she like the Disney one?" I guess it's old. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm watching it for the first time since I was a kid, and it looks horrible, like cheap, direct-to-video animation. She didn't use those terms, but basically that's what she was implying. And I was like, what? And I said, no, that's a masterpiece. That animation is beautiful. She's like, well, are you sure? And I'm like, do you have motion blur on your TV? Through text, I walked her through how to turn this off, and it was on high. You could set it to low, medium, high, or off. I said, absolutely turn that off, and it looked better. But in addition, she also was confused by the new scenes that are added to Beauty and the Beast, which do not look very
human again. We'll be human again.
And again, and the animation is just different, and I don't think it blends. Anyways, so yes, the lesson learned, motion blur, when intentional, is great. Motion blur, when it is forced upon you via your TV set, is horrible and destroys animation.
It's horrible. It destroys animation.
Morgan, it turns every movie into like the cheap, like I'm watching an old soap opera. Yeah, and I'm like,
It makes live action films look like soap operas. I was watching a Steven Spielberg film, and it looked so embarrassingly bad. I had to turn it, change it. And then it makes animation just look so cheap and embarrassing. I don't know. So, it's interesting because animation, there is so much detail put into every single scene.
Oh yeah.
Right? And frame by frame specifically.
Right. And right. When you're destroying all that, when you do motion blur, because every frame is planned out in 2D animation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, that is my rant on motion blur.
Unless you're Richard Williams, then you just like do this like forward, you know, straight ahead animation that just turns out brilliant the first time, supposedly. not really, but that's what it seems like. But yeah. All right, so anything else on the animation? Oh, did y'all see Goodnight, Mr. Foot when it came out on video or when it came out in theaters?
No.
It was like a little short cartoon before that. I think it's on the DVD release.
It is on the DVD release.
I watched it on the crappy Redbox DVD that doesn't give you anything but the feature film. And so it was completed by Genndy Tartakovsky in 4 weeks while they were wrapping up production, him and a small crew of people. That's insane. But anyway, that's just a more further proof that he is an animation master.
Yes, yes.
Ooh, so, the master.
You know, just before, you know, tying up this conversation, in one of his interviews, he said, "To me, animation is about caricature, creating this hotel that is bigger than life. But at the same time, there are human aspects to it and to the characters. They are monsters, but they have human aspects to them." And that's something that he really wanted to focus on, was the characters and their human qualities and nature. And then vice versa, you know, sometimes maybe the humans can be a little mean and monstrous. So that's kind of the dichotomy that we discover here in this. So he also says, "I wanted to bring a 2D sensibility to the posing and acting. I didn't want any video reference." And so he made sure that the animators did not film themselves, because I think he actually discouraged it, because I think a lot of times they film themselves, they use that as video reference, and then
right,
it becomes the scene without a lot of personal expression and whatnot. Not always, but he says, "I wanted them to draw poses in a purely cartoon fashion, removing them from the live action sensibility." So he didn't even want there to be any live action sensibility or practicality at all. Everything needed to be pushed and very cartoonish in the way that you brought it to life. So I thought that was interesting, because I think that was successful. I think that we do get a very cartoony vibe from this film.
That is so interesting, because in every animation project of every animation class that I've taken, and the non-scholastic ones, like the short films I've been involved with, they insisted on live action reference. Now, don't get it twisted. Live action reference videos are super important in animation. But Tartakovsky just said that they're not, like, that they didn't do live action reference. Like, if you've seen the special features for Epic, they were very proud of the fact that they filmed themselves performing all the roles. Of course, Epic was more naturalistic compared to Hotel Transylvania. But here's Tartakovsky saying, "We didn't do any of that. We did pure cartoon, you know, physics and movement. I think that's only possible to do, and you can bypass that live action reference only if you have an understanding and a mastery over cartooning, like over cartoon animation. Other than that, it's super important to have your live action reference." But I was just blown away by that. But of course, like, who could act like Dracula and hold those poses? You know, when they did dailies and they were showing the new footage, they had an interface that's common now, where Tartakovsky would have a pad, and he would draw over on the big screen the pose that he wanted, as opposed to the footage that they were getting in. And so that's how they did a lot of that. And really, his hand was very heavily in the animation. It's a good thing too. You know, he is phenomenal at what he does.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go into the actual movie. How about that?
Yeah. We're basically dealing with an animated version of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And that's not bad. It's really refreshing. I feel like a lot of animated films are like, you know, blanks are people too, or the blank that wanted to blank, you know? The snail that wanted to be in NASCAR, you know, the mermaid who wanted to marry a human. Oh, wait, well, never mind, because now we're dealing with the vampire that wanted to marry the human. So, or, you know, monsters are people too. Well, it doesn't really go into that. Like, humans are pretty, for the most part, pretty dumb, and monsters are pretty separate from humans in this movie. It's not like at the end they were like, "Aw, we embrace the good people of Transylvania, of Romania, and we're living together and learning to work in harmony." Harmony. Harmony.
and live in harmony.
I need to learn that whole song. Maybe it's on YouTube.
Oh, it is. Oh, it really is.
Yeah, we'll do that for the Rotocast.
All right.
Okay, so this does follow the typical formula of the blank that wanted to blank.
Oh, okay, how so?
No, that's what you said, did you not?
Oh, I did. The vampire that wanted to marry the dude. Wait, isn't that just Twilight, though?
I mean, it's the vampire. I see it in Mavis. She's the vampire who wants to go into the real world. She wants to experience something other than the palace walls, right?
The hotel walls. Oh, that's right, because she's like, Dad, you said blah, blah, blah. You can go out and see the world and be your own vampiress.
Vampiress.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I did not think that this film felt there are certain parts where it feels formulaic, I think, towards the end. But I, from the very beginning, I'm very engaged in the film. I love, and I think it's because of the characters and the voice acting.
Ah, the voice acting.
I felt like it was just Adam Sandler going through his phone book and just calling up his friends. And I'm not opposed to that.
How come he's got Selena Gomez on his address book, though?
Selena Gomez for the voice of Mavis. She was actually replaced about 7 months. That's when, at least when the announcement happened, before the film came out. Originally, it was supposed to be Miley Cyrus. And I
remember this. I remember this.
Talk about a monster.
I'm grateful that it wasn't Miley Cyrus, and not that I have anything against her, but I've heard her voice.
I have things against her.
Her performance in Bolt and different things, and I just really enjoyed what Selena brought to the role. And I remember it was like, oh, one pop star for another. But, you know, in the end, I did like what she brought, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about Dracula, but, I mean, I don't know. Besides his amazing animation, I don't have much to say until you get into his relationship with...
Talk about it. I mean,
we'll talk about it?
We'll just talk about that.
Okay. Okay. Oh, one trivia, people, and this is for the chatlings and anyone else who's watching. Why is Dracula's cape not? Why is the inside of his cape not red in the film?
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Do you know why? No, the not blah, because blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah is not the go-to answer when you're a vampire. This movie is about breaking down the stereotypes. What, you mean like you don't die when people drive a stake into your wooden stake in your heart? Yeah, who wouldn't that kill? I love that line. Okay, the reason why the inside of Dracula's cape is not red is because Universal Studios has the rights to Count Dracula, the character, like in film. And as such, or at least the classical depiction of him, you know, the Bela Lugosi look, the I am a vampire, rest is good for the blood, you know, all that stuff. And they had specific parameters as to what they could and couldn't do with Dracula's character. He doesn't have Bela Lugosi's widow's peak from the movie that they did back in the 30s. And and they also said that the inside of his cape could be red. That's really specific.
Yeah. Is that really so, you know, such a highlight?
Is that such a trade secret, or like a, is that such a property for Universal that they can't let it go? Like,
no capes.
No capes. No red capes.
Copyrights are important. So you can hold on to it.
Oh, important.
You can license it out.
Oh, yeah.
Hoping for, like, ooh, maybe if they want a red cape, they can pay us.
Right. And they also had certain things like Frankenstein, or should I say Frankenstein's monster, who just happens to be named Frankie, he couldn't be green and he couldn't have bolts in his neck like in the 1931 movie, you know, the old black and white one. And so they made him blue and they took the bolts out. So then they also had certain parameters for the Frankenstein's monster's wife, aka Bride of Frankenstein. And so they got really specific with stuff.
But you know, I don't think any of that matters. Like, I look at these characters and
I recognize
who they are.
Yeah.
I'm not upset that Frankenstein is not green.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or that his wife looks, you know, doesn't have the white hair with the little black lightning bolt in the side, you know, the Marge Simpson hairdo. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the cover of the DVD case, and I just really like how he's wearing his he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, which I was like, you know what? That's awesome.
The flowers are skulls?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, John Lasseter should wear something like that. Do you think Sony Pictures would, like, donate that, like, that prop shirt to Lasseter and be like, hey, will you wear our Hawaiian shirt? Oh, yup.
So going back to Adam Sandler, you know, Adam Sandler is interesting because majority of the time, he plays his character and people hate him for it. They hate that he's just the same guy in every movie and he's just a goofball. But to me, I don't think he really cares because people pay him a lot of money to make movies that are okay. They do kind of crappy / really crappy in the box office, and he doesn't care. He keeps making a ton of movies. But I appreciated in this movie that his role, while comedic and funny, like, as usual, just was so different than what we normally see him in. I felt that he really put himself into this character, you know, initially, you know, separating himself from Adam with the voice. It sold it for me. I really like him in it. What do you think?
I think this is a great role for him, and I think it was a great role for Kevin James. Kevin James should do more animation.
He should.
Forget Paul Blart. Let's move away from Paul Blart. We've had a sequel, and that, you know, of course, I haven't seen it, so I shouldn't be too judgy. I should be open-minded. But, you know, there were some, you know, I think some more stars should make the transition to animation and just try it out.
Yeah. Andy Samberg as Jonathan.
I love him. I love Andy Samberg. Like, he's literally a celebrity me. If I could just be a celebrity, I would be just like him. Well, I love him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's like if there was ever a TV character that acted like I do, it would be him. I tried to find interviews for Hotel Transylvania with Andy Samberg, and I found this one, and all he does is crack jokes for like 6 minutes, and he doesn't talk about Hotel Transylvania at all. He's my soul brother. Come on.
I wish they would have had more exclusives and more back behind the scenes stuff for this movie available.
You really got to dig for that.
Yeah, you really did. But I mean, that's the thing. I love Sony Animation. If you actually go and subscribe to their YouTube channel, they go through and they give like little backgrounds, like snippets on all these different people that work for the company. And it's one of those channels that I really appreciate. I was like, whoever's in charge of your YouTube is like awesome. Like, go you. Because it makes me feel really invested. It makes me feel like I really want to get to know you people who are working on these fun, cool movies. So, I mean, that was just one of those fun things as well.
Yeah. Oh, hey, quick thing for those of us that want to be animators. Did you know that Sony Animation released the rig, meaning the animatable character, for the zombie bellhop dudes for free? Like, if you have Maya, yes, you can run this rig and you can do your own animations with it. It's not the most advanced, like, amazing, versatile rig. Like, of course, it's solid because it was made professionally, but... it can't do the things that Count Dracula can do, unfortunately, the other hero characters. But yeah, check it out if you want to like play around with like a real like Hollywood animation rig. It's pretty cool that they released it.
That is awesome.
Another reason why I love this studio. Chelsea was kind of talking about how their social media and I guess their YouTube channel, what they do is a little different than a lot of the other studios. But, you know, I don't think we've talked about Sony Pictures Animation. I don't think we reviewed one of their films before. Well, we have Surf's Up.
Yeah.
since we're kind of on this vein, I just want to talk a little bit about the studio. You know, they've done, their first film was Open Season, followed by Surf's Up. They're very well named, known for Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And then Hotel Transylvania, and they do own the rights to the Smurfs. So, you know, they've released Hotel Transylvania 2 will be their 10th film since they released their first film in 2006. And you know, I just really love the studio, and a lot of really great people have gone over to Sony over the past few years. You know, people used to be at Disney and whatnot. I'm just really excited for their future and just what the quality that they bring, yet the different perspective that they bring.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're also just really nice to work with too, FYI. I mean, there's certain companies that I like to email, and Sony is one of them.
They're great. Man, I love Surf's Up. I wish we could do a Surf's Up revisited episode or a Rango revisited, like I said last time.
We'll do a commentary on that one.
I love Jonathan because he's like super easygoing. He's hard to figure out. I can't tell if he's clueless or just really open-minded and easygoing with everything that's going on. He's like, oh, monsters, it's a hotel for monsters. Way to sum it up, you know? But he's really optimistic and positive. I don't know why Dracula hates him at first. We know why Dracula hates him at first. But, what did y'all think of Dracula's relationship with Jonathan? Because Dracula hates his guts, and he spends a lot of the movie trying to get rid of him or trying to dissuade him from hanging out with Mavis.
Mavis.
Well, it's an interesting relationship because you understand from the very beginning why he feels the way that he does about humans, and so he's just trying to protect her. But he's so harmless for the most part, and he's really genuine, and just their relationship back and forth. I love the scene where they are, you know, preparing for the big party, and they have the tables with the tablecloths, and they're
fighting. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're making them fly and whatnot, and there's moments where Dracula lets his guard down, and he's able to just kind of accept him for being who he is in a way, without his prejudice and preconceived notions, and then their relationship is very sweet. But then those walls come back up and it's lost. So that's something that we will see.
That's because Dracula lied to Mavis. You know, he set himself really up really well for the whole "you lied to me" moment. You know, what was it on Meet the Robinsons where Carl's like, "Yeah, I don't see that blown up in your face." But I love, that's kind of the transition point, the scene where they're, you know, having fun, you know, you don't know how to have fun. Mm-hmm. Please, I invented fun, you know, and Dracula lets his guard down and stuff. Dracula never lets his guard down, believe you me. And so that was a rare event to be sure. I like how they become friends, and I wonder if there was once a script where Jonathan is like, you know, Drac, I never knew my father, and I had to come all the way to Transylvania to find my dad. Daddy, you know, it could have been one of those. I don't know. I should get into writing animation. Really lay on the melodrama there. I don't think Andy Samberg would be capable of doing that without cracking up. Do like 800 takes for that. And Drac is like, "You are the son I never had."
I was reading an interview, and apparently it is a reference to Star Wars, the TIE Fighters. He tries to hold just one Star Wars reference per film. He would like to do more. It's Star Wars is such a, you know, ingrained in our society. It inspires everyone, it seems. But he actually worked on Star Wars, and so he's kind of toned back his references, but that is supposed to be a very definite reference to Star Wars. Okay, but I have one question, since we are talking about the scene, which really bothered me.
All right.
The tables are monsters? Like, did you notice they had faces and they kind of acted on their own? I didn't get that.
You mean like the Monster Book of Monsters from Harry Potter?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like Beauty and the Beast, where like some of the objects were enchanted. And I understood the fact that the suits of armor were enchanted and that there were different, you know, like the zombies did a lot of the work. But in the hotel, there's mostly just monsters. There aren't enchanted items for the most part. And so it really confused me. I felt like that was just a plot point that they used. You know, let's just give them faces and have them have a mind of their own, because otherwise if Drac is controlling all of the tables, it doesn't make the chase very interesting, because Dracula is controlling it from the beginning, right? And can do what he wants.
Oh, that's so, right. He can do the controlly thing. Well,
they're monsters and they can act on their own, and Jonathan can just control them, then it makes it a little bit more exciting. But I did not really like that, because I'm like, I don't get, why is a table a monster? I've never heard of this ever. So that was just one little nitpick that I had. I felt like it was simply there just to progress the plot in that moment.
That is a real nitpicky nitpick.
Right?
So there's this interesting part where, out of respect for Dracula, Jonathan like literally like scorns Mavis. You know,
Mavis.
Oh, I'm going to say Mavis. I'm from Texas. And, Mavis, excuse me. And you know, and Mavis really likes Jonathan. They have their zing, you know, the zing thing. And you know, for anyone who's played Yandere Simulator, there's nothing worse than an unrequited love confession to your senpai. And so when she confesses her love to her senpai, Jonathan scorns her because he respects Dracula. What did y'all think about that? I was like, whoa, that went in a direction I did not think it would go. Because
we are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
Because normally, in the, like, wouldn't it be, I don't know, I expected him to be like, yeah, I like you too, Mavis. Let's, you know, I'm going to fight against Drac. Drac, can't you see that we can all get along and I can love Mavis and hashtag love wins? And, you know, I expected it to go that way, but instead he's like, you know what, Mavis? No, I don't like you. And I don't know. I thought that was really interesting. What did y'all think of that little plot device?
I felt like every part of the script for this was well laid out. And from this point all the way to a little bit, or like right beforehand when it was the big reveal as to why Dracula hates humans, because they don't really tell you exactly why throughout the whole thing, but it gets to that part where it's like, oh, because, you know, everybody killed the wife. Okay, I get it.
everybody killed the wife.
I get it. But I felt like all of those were very well placed, and I say kudos to the script writers on those.
But what does that say about Jonathan's character?
But he respects the dad, and he also didn't want to die because he thought that he would suck his blood.
That's right, because he was under pain of death. That's kind of like dealing with the dad in modern relationships today, you know?
How is that, Mason?
Well,
dealing with the dad?
Oh, we showed our sister's fiancé our shotguns. Like, we literally cleaned our shotguns in front of him on the dinner table when he came over. So anyway,
<Classy. laughs>
that was our form of, I will suck your blood until you resemble a dried out whoopee cushion or whatever he says in Hotel Transylvania 2. It wasn't really like that. But
it could mean two things. One, he's just really not that into Mavis, and he's like, okay, see you later. Or two, he loves her so much that he's willing to give her up so she, you know, her family can be happy. But either way, not a satisfying ending for him if it really happened that way.
Yeah, not at all. Okay, how about the zing? What did you guys think of that little?
The zing. What's the zing again? It's their whole love device, right?
Yeah, it's right when they like first see each other and their like eyes glaze over and they're like zing.
Yeah, it's sort of a thing for love at first sight. Mm-hmm. It's just to represent that, but in more of a physical manifestation that you truly know, and it's undeniable. And you know, we see it, it's introduced, and there is that moment, and you could tell, oh, they're definitely into each other. But then she gets the gift from the mom that it's the handwritten storybook, and it's so tender and loving, and, you know, had to be saved for her 118th birthday, which I'll talk more about, you know, Dracula and their immortality, I guess, later. But and then we realize, oh, you know, hold out for your zing, and then that really drives the whole latter part of the film, especially when Dracula realizes, uh-oh, she's had a zing. I know how important this is.
Once the zing has struck, there is nothing that can deter it.
Exactly. But, well,
the zing is a force of nature, man.
Except for the father. I mean, he really could have just turned his back and said, no, I don't care. You zinged. This is a human. We don't...
You don't zing humans.
The past tense form is zung. In some countries, zang. We zang.
Yes, yes. Well,
sorry, Morgan. I'll shut up now.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. The zing is not my favorite part of this film at all, but it definitely drives the last act.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the other characters in the film. You know, we talked about Frankenstein. Then there's Wayne the werewolf, who I absolutely love.
Oh, that's Steve Buscemi.
Yes.
Steve Buscemi, I love him.
I can't do any names today. Tartakovsky, Buscemi, Mavis.
I just love that he has hundreds of kids, basically, and he's every time you see him, it's haggard, exhausted.
His tired dad.
Well, that's how vacation works. The mom's on vacation. She's here to relax, or else. I know how that goes, folks.
And the little munchkins, the little werewolves, are absolute terrors. There's that very first scene where they all go into the hotel, and it's just like a swarm of bees that are they're eating things and they're destroying things. And oh, it's great.
He tips double just because it's a mess back there. And then later on, man, Wayne, do any of your kids respect you? One.
Oh, I love how the kids, well, they didn't really go into the kids in, oh, by the way, I have pizza now, everyone. Excuse me. I have to eat dinner.
Are you going
to
share with the rest of the class, Mason?
Come yes, on. Yes. Everybody open your mouths, and here comes the pizza. Shanna's like, you're going to ruin your webcam. But I really liked him. I lost my train of thought with pizza does that to me. Cowabunga.
I liked Griffin the Invisible Man.
I felt like David Spade was grossly underused in this movie. Like, he had some gags, but I hope they expand his character in the second one if he's even in it.
I think David Spade is always underused in every movie.
I like his voice. I just love his voice. You know, you can't help but think of Cusco. But, you know, it's the problem when you have so many side characters that are supposed to be part of this Drac Pack. And there are
Drac Pack.
Too many of them where you want to focus on all. And we haven't even talked about CeeLo Green, who plays Murray the Mummy. You know, there's just a lot going on.
It's true.
So who was your favorite out of the side characters of Drac's gang?
I liked Quasimodo was frightening. do you realize what's happening here, folks? The whole point of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the Disney version, is to prove that Quasimodo was, in fact, not the monster. here's Sony. It's like when Shrek basically stiff-armed all of Disney Animation and was like, screw you guys, we're going to do our own thing. Sony Animation just took Quasimodo as like, you're still a monster. Like, that never got resolved in our universe. In fact, you're a villain. Isn't that horrible? Like, I don't know.
Actually,
Quasimodo was very horrifying in the old silent film. Like, he was more of an antagonist.
Yeah. That was one thing, though, that was kind of weird for me, because Quasimodo is actually human. He's just half-formed. Like, he's still human.
That they are telling us, that if you have a disability, you're a monster.
You are out of here.
What did Count Frollo get in with the character design here? It's like, he's like, you know what you should really do. I know a guy.
No, it didn't fit. I can't even really make a true comparison that makes that sense. And maybe the reason he is so obsessed with finding humans is because he is one himself and does not want to be caught. He enjoys his chef role. He's the first one he's ever been able to get. And he wants job security. And so that's why he's very overprotective about the hotel and making sure that humans aren't around. Because if he gets caught, it's back to the bell tower. And that's not
good. No, no.
That's pretty good. That's actually a really good theme. I hope maybe they'll go into that on Hotel Transylvania 2. You know, the dad will be like, I have to turn him into a vampire. He's a human. And they're like, well, Quasimodo's a human.
What are you going to do about him?
What are you going to do about that? Anyway.
So, going back to the very beginning, like we're all over the place on this film. Oh, no. Fran Drescher. One more thing.
Aw, Fran.
She is known for her very distinctive, annoying voice. And I was reading an article, and apparently, you know, they cast her because of her voice. She's very much typecasted in these sort of roles. And I'm reading this article. He says, you hire Fran for who she is. She has that amazing voice. And for some reason, she came into the recording sessions, and she just didn't do the voice. And the interviewer was like, what? And he's like, yeah, she just didn't want to be the annoying person anymore. So she had practiced this whole other voice for the character. And I am sitting there, and I am petrified. And so he's just, you know, eventually he had to tell her very soon into that recording session, can you just do your other voice? He said, how do you do that? How do you tell someone who's trying to do something new and clearly doesn't want to be the annoying role again? And he just said, you know, I love you. I love what you've done. I'm such a huge fan of you. That's why you got the job. And so he kind of just kept telling her, can you be more annoying? Can you just be more annoying?
Right.
Fell back into her normal shtick and it worked.
Didn't they do something like that with Don Bluth and what's his name?
It was All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yeah. How he had prepared a, is it Burt Reynolds?
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds had prepared a dog voice over the past, you know, weeks or something. And he's like, nope, just do Burt Reynolds. That's why we hired you.
An actor. I mean, you're trying to, you know, hone your craft and explore, but no, okay. Villains, I gotcha. Okay, I'm okay. Annoying voice, okay, fine.
But do you know what? I don't understand why people would be upset for being typecasted. The fact is, you were casted. Like, you were cast in this movie, so you get a paycheck. Yay! Like, don't be afraid to do what works.
Yet true artists aren't there for the paycheck.
Oh, I'm totally there for the paycheck.
I'm here for the paycheck. No.
All right.
That's why I want to be a character TD instead of like a PA or something.
Whole laundry list of voice actors and celebrities.
Much laundry.
Do you think that this worked, this cast, this ensemble?
I feel like it
that is, that's the big question.
I didn't feel like there was any, a lot of, you do run the risk of having it be one of those where it's like, all I see are, you know, it's an epic. But I didn't feel like this was, I didn't feel like it was distracting. The only one that you could really tell was Adam Sandler for me. Everybody else afterward, I was like, oh yeah, it's that guy. Oh cool, it's that guy. You know, it's like, and you were just happy to hear their voices.
Yeah.
Sorry. You were just happy to hear what was going on. So I had no problems with it.
Yeah, let's analyze this. There are movies that animated movies where the big star that does the voice acting, you know, the title role, just overshadows everyone and is really annoying. Home is one example. Rango is another. Johnny Depp just does not stop talking in that film, despite how much I love it. But I really didn't think that the stars in this movie really did that. I felt like the writing was such that they could show their talents, you know, as themselves, as their celebrity selves, but also have a, you know, also give each other the space that they needed to have a coherent script.
Yeah.
And so it's not that it worked on a Prince of Egypt level, but it did work better than in other films that had a huge Hollywood cast.
Well, and one reason is, you know, this is Adam Sandler and his Happy Madison gang. I mean, they are just known for doing films together. And as a result, they're sort of like a comedy troupe. They know how to work off each other and to play off each other and to really just make that ensemble work. That is their thing. They're great as individuals, but even better as a cast. And I think that's one reason why it also works is because they're familiar and they're especially familiar with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I was reading about the comedy in this film in the interviews, surprisingly, there wasn't a lot. You think you bring in like all these comedic guys, you know, amazing. And there wasn't a lot of ad-libbing that went on per se in this film, which I thought was interesting. I mean, you think of Aladdin and Robin Williams and how much that he had ad-libbed. That's when you bring in someone who is known for their comedy, you kind of give them a little bit more leeway to play around with the script. And I guess that wasn't the case for this film. They really stuck to the script and just worked really hard on pushing their own lines and make sure the lines that were written were as good as they possibly could be.
Yeah, and Gindy actually worked a little bit with the cast, obviously, for not the cast, but the writing team, to make sure that, like, they had other visual gags that went around with it that worked really well. Like, for example, you had the fart gag, which, you know, there's always a great fart gag.
There's always the fart gag.
And so, like, in the commentary, he talks about how there was, these guys, I thought I would just be going in there just to kind of sit back and like watch them do their thing. And then I had this idea as they started talking about this fart gag that one of the witches would come in and suck it up with the little thing and like throw it into the fire and it would create this giant fireball. And everybody laughed and it felt good. And so we went with that. And so, I mean, there's little things like that worked out really well. And he was able to tie in not just the visual, which is a huge part of a Gindy Tartakovsky film. The visual is where it's at. But to also add the comedic timing and everything in there, it was just, I thought it worked out well.
Yeah, I think that visual comedy is something that's very indicative of the, you know, the golden age of animation with the Chuck Jones and you know, Tex Avery, Looney Tunes, even a lot of the Walt Disney shorts were very reliant on visual comedy. And we got to see a lot of that in this film, and I loved it. I remember, there's the point where Jonathan sticks his hand in the skeleton and the guy gets super mad, or where there's the fleas that are on their honeymoon, or the skeleton in the shower. And there's just so many things that I can't even think of them all, unfortunately. I just wish that I could just watch this again and take note of every little thing that made me laugh, because it seems, there's drunken heads and all the, there's so many great things that they did in this film.
Yeah, they really created a world, you know, a universe where monsters like work together to make this hotel a fun experience, you know? And I kind of like the concept of like Drax's motivation for making Hotel Transylvania is to have like a haven or a little oasis for monsters, you know. Didn't the teaser trailer have like all the monsters like looking around for tourists wherever they live and like packing up their things and like sneaking out to like get out to the hotel, you know? And I like that concept, and I like how everything just kind of works together. There's a lot of imagination involved, and yet they're characters that we can relate to. So that's animation. It's one of the whole points of it. Did we talk about the zing?
We did talk about the zing, but
I believe in a gradual zing. That's almost impossible in animation.
I have yet to feel a zing, so I don't know.
Oh, poor Chelsea.
Aw, don't worry. I'm fine.
Did you like the concept of the hotel, that there was a hotel for monsters? I personally loved it. I thought it was just something new that they were able to, you know, I could definitely imagine this being a storybook. You know, a lot of animated films are storybooks first, such as How to Train Your Dragon and Shrek. And I felt that this could have very much been a storybook that someone had written and they adapted, which is not the case, but I loved it. I love the concept of monsters. They go to their own hotel to get away from humans, and they can just be themselves.
It would have made a great golden book.
Yeah, I liked it how they kind of turned the fact that, you know, Dracula normally has his mansion, castle, whatever, you know, tucked away somewhere, but then they turned it into a five-star hotel resort. It's great.
So, what do you guys, are there any other things you want to talk about before we talk about the ending?
Let's just go into the ending.
So, really, there's this moment where, so, you know, we haven't really gone into detail, but basically the plot of the film is she wants to go away. The daughter of Dracula turns 118. She's finally ready to go see the world. Doesn't happen. And this human comes into the hotel. They fall in love. And eventually they're getting ready for the party. He's helping to plan the party under the ruse of being a monster, then is discovered and sent away. And then Drac in this moment realizes, oh, she loves him. I have to go find him. So Drac Pack go back and they search for
Drac Pack go back.
Drac Pack go back. Yes. Like Drac Pack, they go back and they search for Johnny because he realizes what is the most important thing for Mavis. And then at the very end, we have this dance party and the 100th birthday.
Obligatory song and dance party at the end of the animated film.
You know, can we talk about that? That is...
Let's talk about it.
Very common in animated films, especially nowadays. But Madagascar, I'm looking at you.
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it.
Move it.
So how did you feel that the film ended? I think the beginning is very, very strong. This last third, it's pretty predictable what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, of course they're going to find them. Of course they're going to bring them back. But what do you think?
I did like how he was, you know, speaking through the guy on the airplane. I thought that was kind of cool. It was just funny. Like the guy ends up speaking in his horrible accent. I like that part. But as far as, like you were saying, for me, it was pretty predictable. But at the same time, I had enjoyed my time up until that point, and it wasn't like it was falling at all. It just kind of was like, okay, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the value of the ending is the comedy by which they execute the finale, not the you know, story of the finale itself, which is unfortunate. It does make it weaker than the exposition and you know, second act or whatever. As for the obligatory song and dance party at the end of the animated film, at least Drac's moves are better than other animated characters.
Well, because they're so different, because they're so, you know, caricatured, and, you know, it is good. He's funny. Anytime he moves, I'm just in awe of the movements. So, you know, we have this dance party, and then there's the soundtrack, which... was one thing that did take away from this film for me. I felt that it even now, 3 years later, it feels dated. You know, these very current pop songs and whatnot. I just don't...
just watch Strange Magic.
No, it sometimes they can work very well, but I did feel that these were a bit distracting.
You know, that's a real shame because somebody who worked on them, like Mark Mothersbaugh... Okay, it's just another name for me to mispronounce, so I'm not even gonna try. Mark Mothersbaugh was involved in the music, and he wrote Everything Is Awesome, which is like the animated movie anthem of like the past like year or so. Sure. So, which is bigger, Let It Go or Everything Is Awesome? I already know the answer to that, but he was involved in it, and I thought that the music was pretty uninspiring, also.
Well, there you go.
Maybe it was inspired, but it didn't inspire.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it held on. It didn't give me like a negative feeling, though. Like, I just kind of, it was there. All right, cool.
It was there, and you know what? I really think those song and dance numbers are like the animators going, you know what? I want to do something like, I want to do something that people aren't telling me what to do, you know? I'm going to have real, real fun with this character, you know? So maybe that's a thing. Maybe it's like a reprieve for the animators or for the animators to show their skill. Although I've never seen an animator's demo reel include the dance sequence at the end of their animated film. So I might be off the mark with that one.
That's why you need to do it, Mason. And then you'll get every job you'll ever ask for because they're just looking for that.
Be like, guys, I did Trek in Trek 6 at the song and dance number. So.
Yeah, hire this guy.
You know you're awesome when you end every sentence with so. So.
So.
So, let's talk about the sequel opportunities for this. Very, you know, a few years after this, it was announced that we are getting a sequel to Hotel Transylvania 2, and it was, some people were really excited, others not so much. And I was in this initial interview for the very first film, he talks about, you know, franchise potential and whatnot. And I thought he just had a great quote because, yes, he is an artist. You know, he's a visionary, whatnot. But he's also realizes that this is a business. He says, you know, it's great to create a Dracula that is timeless again. You know, get a TV show, another movie. That's always the goal, to create something that is franchisable. We are in a commercial business, obviously. You want it to appeal to the mainstream. But at the same time, I don't spend much time thinking about that because I'm so involved in the moment. Most of the time, it's a miracle to finish the movie in itself. So he goes to say, you know, as I'm making a film, I'm not sitting there thinking about, like, ooh, this is going to make a great trilogy. However, he does say that is a goal, that, you know, the end product, you would love it to go on and have legs and be able to be a franchise. You know, I'm thinking of Toy Story. I'm thinking of Cars. Just these franchises, these characters that live on in all sorts of mediums, whether it's sequels or TV shows or toys. And I just thought that was very, you know, wise of him to realize, yeah, this is the industry that I'm in, and to be successful in this, that's really what you have to do. And it's awesome that he is directing the sequel and been involved from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm excited for Hotel Transylvania 2, because now, you know, Genny Tartakovsky will be involved in everything, you know, from pre-production to the final touches. So I'm excited for that reason. Also, I just love his work, and the fact that we know that his, like, signature style is, like, stamped on the animation style for this film just gets me excited. So also, Hotel Transylvania 2 will feature songs by Fifth Harmony.
Yes.
So our friend Ben O'Rose will be extremely excited for that, because that's all he tweets about.
So just a little preview, I guess, for Hotel Transylvania 2. When this episode launches in, you know, our iTunes feed and our podcast feed, which is Friday, Hotel Transylvania 2 will be released. And then our next episode, we will be talking about Hotel Transylvania 2. I have seen the film. My screening was last week, and I loved it. Now, I don't think it is the best film ever, but as a sequel and as a continuation of these characters, I had a great time. I was laughing. I really enjoyed myself. And I'm really excited to see it again to prepare for this this next episode. A lot of times if I see a movie early and it's 3 weeks till we do the episode, I won't see it again. I'll just go off memory, but just to let you know, to get you guys excited, I will be seeing it again. That's how. So let's rate it.
Ah, y'all go first.
This was a hard one for me to rate. I'll be honest. Cause it was, I'll just let you guys know, I liked the movie, and I felt like it was creative and fun, and the story was laid out really well. And it is one that you can go back to really easily. I mean, it's one that you could have, like, going in the background of life. It's not too heavy that you have to, like, really invest your time and energy to be able to get into the feeling and the emotion of the story. But instead, you're just like, yeah, maybe, wavy, yeah, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can just go in and just enjoy it for what it is and just get into the story at whatever point in time that you join in. So I liked it for that point. And the fact that, that type of replay value is excellent. I couldn't give it a 5-star, just because it didn't have that X factor, I guess. And 4.5, I was like, even that's probably a little too high for my, like, real feeling. So my real feeling is going to be, like, is technically more like a 4.25, but we're just going to go for 4.
No such thing.
Hey, this is your review. You can do whatever you want.
Thank you.
All right, 4.25 from Chelsea. So I'm going to give it 4 stars. Thinking of this film, I enjoy it from start to finish. I've seen it multiple times since I sporadically decided to buy the film without having seen it. And overall, every time I'm just invested in the characters. I love Dracula. I love Mavis. I love the ensemble cast. I love the sight gags and the jokes and the world that is ultimately created. And on top of that, beautiful animation, character design, It's definitely fresh. It's something a little different than I guess we see every day. And however, it's not necessarily the most amazing groundbreaking film that I've ever seen. But nonetheless, I do enjoy it, and that is a huge part of, you know, what I rate my films for my own personal rating system. And for that reason, it is 4 stars.
I also just one pointing in there. I really liked the art book.
Ah, yes. I too am giving it 4 stars. I'm going to give it a pretty high rating to see if the sequel matches up to it. Yeah, I really enjoy the animation and the comedy, and Adam Sandler is actually really good in it, and so is Andy Samberg. And I actually like Selena Gomez in it, which is weird. And everyone else just kind of works. And this is one of those movies that you got to watch to study how to really transfer those 12 principles of animation into CG animation.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's all I got to say.
All right, so I did a listener Twitter question, and I asked, who is your favorite character in Hotel Transylvania and why? And I got, so far, at the time of recording, there are 3 responses. Duchess Swan says Mavis. Everyone wants to be able to explore new things. Mark Brown says, I remember having a big crush on Mavis after seeing the movie the first time. No idea why, though. She's amazing. And then Eric Stenstrud says, Mavis, because when I first watched her voice reminded me of one of my good friends. Kind of random reason, but whatevs. So it's unanimous. Mavis is everyone's favorite. I am actually doing a Mavis tutorial a Mavis tutorial for the YouTube channel. I'm just waiting to get a few pieces, and I'm really excited. I know there's a bunch of other ones on there, but that was just one character that I really wanted to be. So, okay. So let us go into our voicemail. So since we did change the movie that we were reviewing sort of last minute, we didn't get as many voicemails, but we do have Old Faithful here, and our one voicemail is from Sarah. So let's check it out.
Hello, Artist Scuppers. It's me, Sarah, again, and I'm here to leave a voicemail for your Hotel Transylvania today. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought. That's fun talking. I am really excited for this episode because, well, one, live stream, yay, and two, because Hotel Transylvania is awesome, and I'm really excited for the sequel. My best friend and I plan on going to see it at some point. And yeah, decided with a short voicemail. Hope you guys all have a good day. Bye, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. I love you all.
Love you too, Sarah.
Aww, we love you too, Sarah.
Sarah's in the chat room. She goes by amazing names. This time she is Quicksilver Goes Room.
Was she Thor last time?
Thor last time.
Ah, that's her. Okay.
So she rated it 5.5 stars, and you could tell by the voicemail she's really excited for the sequel. So, Sarah, I will just give you a sneak peek. You will not be disappointed. I mean, again, just as this movie isn't a 5-star movie, the sequel is not a 5-star sequel, although that does happen sometimes. However, as a continuation of these characters, can't go wrong. So, and there's a lot more. The humans have – it's a few years down the road, and humans have been accepted. You know, vice versa, humans and monsters interact. And so we get to go see monsters in the human world, and it's really fun. And there's lots of Mavis, so any Mavis fans, get ready.
All right.
Right, so of course, as every episode, you can go to the show notes, rotoscopers.com/104, and that's where you can give us your reviews of Hotel Transylvania. Definitely go in there, leave us your thoughts. If there's something you agreed with, disagreed with, you want to give your rating, go in there. We go into the comments, you know, for a few weeks after we release the episode. We love reading what you guys have to say. For those of you who couldn't join live, or you're, you know, in the future and you are listening to this, definitely go check that out. Of course, you can tweet about this and talk about the show in general just using the hashtag AnimAddicts. And if you want to be as cool as Sarah and leave us a voicemail, you can do so by going to rotoscopers.com/voicemails or give us a call at 406-646-6575. And yeah, so I guess that's really all that we have. Thank you to everyone who's been supporting us through Patreon. I feel that, I don't know about you guys, but you know, since we do have quite a handful of patrons, and it's just amazing that I feel that I come even more prepared for the show than I did before, because I know that the patrons are backing themselves and that, you know, I'm doing this for them, when before it was more for just for me. But, you know, I do a lot more of reading interviews and listening to interviews, watching interviews, reading up on the film, watching it multiple times if I can, bonus features. And I definitely think that the patron support has helped to improve the show. I mean, the patrons are the reason why you can watch this live. You can go to rotoscopers.com/live, and that's where you can see the video broadcast. But also, you can go on the bottom of the website, the footer. That is our schedule. It lets you know when we're recording, so that way you won't miss a live show. So thank you to everyone who supported us. We appreciate it. We love you. And yeah, anything else, guys? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, Jet, do all that stuff that she just said.
I'm so happy that we were able to review Hotel Transylvania.
Me too.
I love this live video format. We are so grateful to our patron subscribers so that we can bring this to you. If this is your first time listening, or if you're a long time listener and you've been in like the chat and you've been in on this live broadcast, then tell your friends and you know, tell your parents too. They might want to listen. I don't know. Tell everyone. And so, you know, so that what Roto Nation can grow. What have we called the general populace of the Rotoscopers listen? Like,
official name. The unofficial name is the Roto Gang.
Roto Gang. All right, well.
We have something better. That's why I don't have anything official yet.
Maybe we can have our own tattoos and, like, gang signs and, like, bandanas that we can wear. Well, yeah.
That's one reason why I might want to avoid the term. If it's
well, for now, the Rotoscopers community is a powerhouse for animation. We love you guys so much. We love engaging with the Rotoscopers community. Like, that was the whole point of this Patreon subscriptions and making the expansions we have so that you can have better access to us and so that we can all talk about what we love together. And so I'm excited for where we've gone and where we are going.
All right. Well, until next time, guys, I'm Chelsea.
I'm Morgan.
And I'm Mason. Blah, blah, blah.
You are watching the Rotoscopers.
No.
It's not going to work out. Just
Rotofowl. Rotofowl.
Right, anyways, even though when all three of us talk, it doesn't work. Okay. What? We are
the Rotoscopers.